Contractors Cargo Company. Come on up. Good morning, Mr. Peake.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is George Peake, and I'll be presenting the argument on behalf of the Appellant Contractors Cargo Company. As the Court can tell from the briefing, this case is about, is an appeal, this case is before this Court on appeal from two separate orders of the District Court. One order granting plaintiff's motion in limine number 4, which was granted in advance of trial, and from the order ultimately entered on the jury's verdict. The Court knows from our briefs this case is about the fabrication of a rail car deck, and that the appeal itself is over a finite evidentiary issue that was made in advance of trial, particularly a granting of plaintiff's motion in limine 4, which sought to preclude Contractors Cargo Company from introducing any testimony regarding what has come to be known as Sharpie V-notch impact testing. It's referred to in the briefs as CVN testing or Sharpie testing.
Before we get into the question of timeliness, I'd like to ask you this. How can the Sharpie test results be relevant to an implied warranty of any type when everyone agrees that if a final product is to meet the Sharpie test standard, it must be expressly included in the contract?
That is an excellent question that hits at the heart of this appeal. The Sharpie testimony was precluded by the District Court because it determined that it was not relevant to contractors' breach of contract claims. In that regard, the District Court said Sharpie testing goes specifically to the performance of the deck, and therefore it's not spoken of in the contract, and therefore not relevant to the breach of contract claims. It goes to the heart of the implied warranty claims because it does regard the performance of the deck, and particularly the welding and the fitting that was used in the subject deck. The exact error we're alleging on appeal is that Sharpie testimony was relevant to the performance of the deck, to its use for the ordinary purposes for which that type of product is sold, for its ordinary purpose, for which, or for the particular purpose for which this product was sold, and that it completely supported the breach of warranty claims.
Well, what would it prove, besides the brittle weld, that the other evidence did not address? What would be unique about the Sharpie test that would have enlightened the jury to something else?
That's an excellent question, Judge Mannion. Sharpie testing is, as you know, a destructive test. It's done after the product is completed. You take it apart, and it tests a certain character or quality of the metal. As you're aware from the record, that other destructive testing was admitted at the time of trial. Electromagnetic testing was admitted, scanning, electron microscopy was admitted, Rockwell hardness testing was admitted, but most importantly, tensile testing was admitted. Tensile testing and Sharpie testing are very similar in that they are destructive and they test the unique quality of the metals.
And what did that other one test, what did it show?
That's an excellent question, because in the course of this case, I had to learn what the difference of this was.
My questions aren't excellent. I just don't know. So whatever it is.
The difference distilled is this. If you took an icicle, the tensile testing tests the strength of the icicle as you pull it apart, while the Sharpie testing tests the strength of the icicle as you snap it in half. Both a destructive test, both testing the character and the quality of the weld in this case. So to go to your question about what didn't come in, and Appelli raises in their brief that we in fact got to use the adjective brittle, which it contends is a term of art that is tantamount to referencing Sharpie during the course of the trial. What got in before this jury was an expert's testimony that was cloaked in science. It had the badge of science over it. And that was weighed against an expert's testimony that was badged by an adjective. And that is the error in this case. That is what we are alleging was harmful.
Because the way this very unique product works, it's huge, and I understand that this deck is sort of a connector between two ends of that?
That's correct. The deck itself fits between two rail cars.
And you put something real heavy on that deck.
That's correct.
And that may vary from whichever product it happens to be, either in height or in weight.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, so when, and this, the advantage of this one was it got a lot lower, gave a little more room. Is that the theory?
That's how it was designed, exactly. Yeah. So it could carry different kinds of cargo to different trains.
Has one ever broken?
Not that I'm aware of. The subject deck is the only one we're aware of breaking during the proof load testing process.
Without having installed it, obviously.
Correct.
Yeah, so that was, what would they do next? Make another one?
And that's, in fact, exactly what happened. Another deck was constructed.
Okay, so what, I don't know what the end result would be different.
Well, Judge, I think this is what we tried to hit off in the brief, is that when our metallurgist gave testimony to the jury that decided this cause, he was prevented from testifying with regard to a destructive empirical test that he performed on this failed deck, a test that produced empirical results that he was prevented from conveying to the jury, while Empire's expert was not prevented in conveying the results of an empirical test that yielded empirical evidence. And the difference is this, that when contractor's metallurgist is prevented from presenting his evidence, it's his evidence that was used by contractor's welding expert to base his opinions on that this product did not meet industry standards, that the welds did not meet industry standards. And that goes back to the question about the relevance to the warranty claims, because it goes to its ordinary purpose and the particular purpose for which the product was sold. That's what we're missing here. We're missing the badge of science. And when jurors are asked to compare these two competing experts' theories, that's what we're looking at.
Is there any evidence that these railroad decks had ever been constructed out of T1 steel before this deck was manufactured?
During the course of the trial, and it's the record evidence of this, is Mr. Wheeler's testimony, where he testified that other decks of this type were being used in this field and were being made of T1 steel. Empire Bucket had experience making all types of structures, including rail cars, out of T1 steel, but probably more aptly, tractor-trailer transports that acted in the same way as a deck with camber that sank with the weight of heavy equipment.
Because Empire says that you selected a unique material, and so there is no warranty of fitness for a particular purpose.
In addition, Empire argues that, in fact, contractors selected every aspect of this product. But there was testimony at trial that it was Empire made specific and express input as to the type of welding that was used and on this exact weld notch that failed, that it was their expertise that was relied upon by contractors when it had this deck constructed. That was one of the reasons they selected Empire Bucket, was because of its expertise in the welding and fitting processes that were the ultimate manufacturing processes used to make this deck.
And on the question of timeliness, which you wanted to start out with, did Empire really need to bring this as a motion in limine? Could it simply have waited until the subject came up, you know, at trial to object?
Of course, any time an evidentiary, the reason district courts address motions in limine is to try and handle these evidentiary issues in advance of trial. We simply cited the federal rule, the 6B rule, which requires that if an act is taken after the time has expired, then it needs to have a concomitant motion for an extension of time. Naturally, we're protecting all our clients' interests on this appeal and in a finite amount of space tried to present that as an additional grounds. However, I'm glad you raised that, because the primary error alleged on appeal here is that Sharpie testimony was omitted when it was acknowledged by the district court to be relevant to ongoing and, though under siege, live claims for breaches of implied warranties.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Carnell, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. Obviously, this case in the big picture sense is my client Empire Bucket required to build an indestructible deck, especially when they build it according to the plans and specifications provided by the buyer contractor's cargo? As I think you know, the deck that was built is the size of a railroad car. It's made out of 2 inches of steel and bigger. The contractor's cargo engineer, after the fact, after the deck had failed during their testing process, found an area called it was 1/10 of an inch long, about a pencil width wide, of an inclusion in a weld. An inclusion is a part of a weld that contains the same materials in the weld, but has some different materials in it. It does not necessarily mean that there's anything wrong with the weld just because it has an inclusion.
Was that like a weak spot or a bubble or something like that?
It may be considered a weak spot. It's different material. It's not the same material as the rest of the weld. In this particular case, a 1/10 inch inclusion would not be rejectable under any standards. In the size of the weld made here, a 2-inch inclusion would not be rejectable. That's because all the material around the weld, around that inclusion, is more than strong enough to hold those pieces of metal together at that point. The one test that Contractors Cargo's expert did that showed any deviation from any kind of standard was the Sharpie test, the Sharpie hardness test or brittleness test. Is the metal as hard or is it more brittle than you would expect? His conclusion was because the metal was more brittle in that area, in the 1/10 inch inclusion, that's the only area, that was the cause of the failure. This whole thing, their whole theory, basically goes to the cause of the failure of the deck, not to how it was built, not to whether it met standards, not to whether it followed the design. And it is clear, the contract documents in this case, all the plans, all the specifications, did not require the welding to meet the Sharpie standard. Contractors Cargo agrees with that in the lower court and in this appeal. The welding standards clearly require, if you want to meet a Sharpie hardness or brittleness test, it must be in the contract documents. It was not in the contract documents. We filed a motion in limine to keep out the results of a Sharpie test because it was not in the contract documents.
But did one of your experts, James Brusso, rely on the Sharpie testing results? Because on page 7 of the defendant's opening brief, CCC implies that Brusso used the results informing his opinion. And if that's the case, then how could it be proper to exclude the evidence as irrelevant?
He did not use the Sharpie test in forming his opinion. He relied on certain other tests. The destructive tests were done by Mr. Schwante's contractor's cargo expert. He looked at those tests, the tensile test, the chemical properties test, some other tests, that the steel, the T1 steel, met all the specifications. So he looked at those tests, did not redo all those tests himself, relied on those tests in forming his opinion. He did not testify to the jury about anything related to the Sharpie test in this case.
If that weld, apparently some slight defect in it, if it were perfectly done, would that have made a difference?
In this case, no. I say the weld was perfectly done.
Okay.
A 1/10 inch inclusion does not violate any standards.
Right.
Passes everything. There's nothing wrong with it.
Okay.
So it's the same thing. He used the example. Mr. Bruce used the example. Let's take a piece of steel like this. Let's put a 1/10 inch inclusion in the middle of that steel. And it doesn't violate any standards. As you pull it apart, eventually that steel is going to break just because so much force. But the inclusion is not the cause of that. The inclusion may be where it starts, But it does not mean it was a violation of any standard to have that inclusion in there.
So nothing at some point is indestructible, I suppose.
Correct. At some point, you put enough stress on it, it will break. Even though all standards are followed, all designs are followed. And in this case, the stress put on is when Contractors Cargo had the deck, when they were testing it, there's 120,000 pounds loaded on it, and the Schnabel railroad cars allow to jack up one end. The deck had fallen down the night before after they'd put the 820,000 pounds on it, which Brusso said is an indication that something is deforming or something is going wrong. But then Contractors Cargo starts jacking it up hydraulically, and during that jacking process, that's where it snapped. That's where it's broke. That was the extra stress put on the test, the stress that went over the limit for this particular piece at that point in time.
You mean it sort of bent one way, and when they pushed it back in the other direction, it broke? Is that sort of what happened? I know this is pretty elementary. Someone else referred to the seventh grade earlier, but I guess maybe that's where I am.
It's not quite that simple. The fact is, in the course of this trial, there were no good explanations why it snapped at that particular point or while they were doing that, other than all the experts agreed you need, just with the inclusion sitting there, it won't break. You need some stress put on it. The only stress put on it was the hydraulic lifting that Contractors Cargo did on the second day. So something happened during that process of raising the deck that put stress on it that caused it to snap, unrelated to anything wrong with the weld.
Is this product unique?
Definitely unique.
No, there's no one other like it. Is that?
I think there's no other one like it in the country, Your Honor. I think it was made of T1 steel at the time. It was the only deck of the kind used with Schnabel cars made of T1 steel. It was lower, so it could carry higher transformers. It had a special camber in it. Overall, it was designed by Time Marine with input from Contractors Cargo. They deliver the plans and specs to Empire Bucket, and Empire Bucket builds it according to the plans and specs, does all the testing required of it, of its welds during the building process. All that testing passed, and they then delivered the deck to Contractors Cargo, and it was during their process that the deck ultimately failed, during the testing process.
Was this sagging? Whatever, I'll call it that, because I don't know what else to call it. Was that expected?
There was no sagging that I know of.
Okay, I don't know what to call it then. They said it went lower than it was supposed to. That's why they jacked it back up.
Well, it wasn't well explained. Part of the problem was Contractors Cargo did not take pictures, did not take measurements, did not do the things engineers would ordinarily like to do in determining why something failed. Let's look at it right now, take pictures, take measurements. Those weren't done. In fact, some of the notes taken at the time of the failure were ultimately thrown away by the Contractors Cargo representative. So neither side of the engineers had a good explanation of why it dropped the day before, other than there had to be some stress overload on the product, because that's the only thing that could cause it to drop down that engineers could figure out. You know, really, the very simple issue here, as you, I think you know, is did the district court abuse its discretion in granting the motion in limine to keep out the Sharpie test? The test is, obviously, could any reasonable person agree with the district court? And I think that's simple. Yes. It was a proper ruling because Sharpie testing was not in the contract documents, which is clearly required, and everybody agrees with that. And if you go further than that, really they're not arguing they should get it to deal with their breach of contract action, but they should be able to talk about it as to their implied warranties. Frankly, I don't know how you do that in a trial setting. How do you tell a jury, oh, the Sharpie testing has nothing to do with the breach of contract because it wasn't in the contract, but you can think about it in terms of the breach of implied warranties? It doesn't make sense. You can't separate it. Either it's in or it's out, in my opinion. And and in addition, their experts were able to draw the same conclusions. They could not use the word Sharpie. They can't say this one-tenth-inch inclusion failed the Sharpie test. They were able to say this weld was brittle. And they were able to say, because this weld was brittle at that one-tenth in inclusion, that's why it failed. So they got the same results in, both under their contract action and under their implied warranty actions. They got their proof in without using the word Sharpie. And they said brittleness many, many times during the course of their experts' testimony. So their experts weren't precluded from giving their opinions. They only were precluded from using that word Sharpie because it wasn't required. And in the end, the jury agreed. There was no breach of contract. There were no implied warranties breached. And I think that's clear. All the plans, in spite of what the contractor's cargo says about the brittleness, is that the deck was built according to plans, the welds passed all tests. Even if there wasn't one-tenth inch inclusion, that did not violate any welding standards. The weld was strong enough to meet all standards, even with that inclusion. And as I said in our brief, even assuming the district court erred in not allowing the Sharpie, that error was harmless because their experts, as I have said, were able to draw the same conclusions that the weld was brittle, and that was the reason that the deck failed. They were able to tailor their testimony, in part because the motion was granted early, so they had a few days before the trial to tailor their testimony so they didn't have to talk about Sharpie, but they could give the same conclusion. I think the Cook case is the closest case on point, where the district court did not allow certain publications into evidence. The experts at trial testified about the industry standards without those publications, and this court said error was harmless under those circumstances. Now, we've argued in our brief that even assuming the district court was wrong, even assuming it wasn't harmless, I think the facts in this case show that, as a matter of law, there were no implied warranties given. That's because the design of the deck was unique. It was lower, lighter. It had this special camber. There was no other deck like it, as I've said. There's no warranty of merchantability because there was no ordinary purpose to this deck because it was unique. Secondly, it was designed by Time Marine Contractors Cargo Engineer. They specified the type of steel, the size of each piece of steel, the type of welds, and Contractors Cargo's design and specifications. The seller determined what it wanted. They gave the plans and specifications to Empire Bucket. Empire Bucket built it according to those plans and specifications. Under those circumstances, there can be no warranty of fitness for a particular purpose because the buyer selected all the elements of that of the product. I've said it many times. This deck was built the way it was supposed to be built. It did not violate any standards. The jury found Empire Bucket did not breach its contract. There were no implied warranties of merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose. The jury heard all the facts and made those decisions. Empire Bucket was not required to build an indestructible deck, only to build a deck that met the specifications provided by Contractors Cargo. They did it in this case. The district court should be affirmed. Thank you.
How much time?
Thank you, Your Honors. Utility of arguments like this is we get to clear up some matters. There was discussion made by Mr. Carnell about this inclusion, and there was much testimony about that at trial. Inclusion is an imperfection in the weld, but whether or not it passes standards is an issue that goes to the breach of contract claim. The contract required the welding to be done to AWS standards. Those are the standards Mr. Carnell references when he says this inclusion, this imperfection, would pass standards. That's quite a different thing than the Sharpie testimony we sought to have introduced in support of the warranty claims. Contractors acknowledged at the time of trial and has acknowledged in this appeal that Sharpie indeed is not relevant to the breach of contract claims. But because contractors had live, although under siege, live claims for breaches of implied warranties, these attacks on these claims existed prior to trial, during trial, and after trial. Ultimately, the claims went to the jury. The court's decision acknowledged that those claims had enough evidentiary support to go to the jury. In addition, the court acknowledged that the Sharpie testimony was relevant to the performance of the deck and these implied warranty claims. It does so in its written order of May 30th, one of the orders that we have appealed from. The reason that Sharpie, again, is different and why it doesn't suffice to have a metallurgical expert tell a jury of lay people the word brittle 22 times is because science is important. Science tells us something about the way our world works, and it is an informed knowledge like no other kind. It's concerned, above all else, with empirical testing and empirical results. It was recently put another way by Brazilian film director Jose Padilla, who said science is based on the possibility of objectivity, on the possibility of being able to examine the observations of others. That without this possibility, there's no empirical principle to allow us to make a decision between competing arguments or conclusions. The plain fact is that Empire Bucket's expert got to look at that jury and say that this deck passed every destructive test. While contractor's expert, knowing that not only did it fail a test, but it failed a critical test, and one on which the welding expert would have said meant and demonstrated that the weld didn't meet industry standards. This is how contractors was prejudiced by this evidentiary ruling. The harm was significant and weighed heavily and profoundly upon this jury. For that reason, we're asking that this court reverse that error and order a new trial on all issues. Thank you very much.
Thanks to both parties. And the case will be taken under